The Trail Network podcast is brought to you by Sandy Boy Productions.
It just felt like all these different stresses, mental, emotional, and physical, just bubbled up all at once. And like I mentioned, this was the toughest like grueling experience I've ever had. Like that was sort of the manifestation of it, is just like my body just reacted by breaking into tears. And I like there, Leah had a little, the corner of the crew tent had a, like a
changing
almost
tent.
Like a little fitting room type thing, yeah. Like a curtain you could. And I just like went in there and I was like holding on to the top of the changing tent thing and just like bawling my eyes out and like trying to catch my breath.
Hello and welcome to the Trail Network podcast. In this episode, I'm joined by Leah Yingling and her husband and partner in crime, Mike McDonagle, as we dive into her recent experience racing at Further, Lululemon's ultra running event. We take a closer look at what goes into both running and crewing a six-day race, dissect a few mid-race breakdowns, and then Mike and Leah share with us some top tips that they've learned from this crazy experience that we can all apply to our own races. It's a great episode, and I'm excited to share it with you. Without further ado, and maybe a little pun intended, here we go. All right, welcome back to the Trail Network podcast. I'm Hillary, and I'm very excited to be here with Leah Yingling, who's also one of our hosts, and with her husband, Mike McDonagle. And we are going to dive into a little race that Leah was involved in last week, just a little one. You might have heard of it, Lululemon's Further event. And Leah, why don't you just kind of talk us through what it was, how it came to be, how you got involved with this crazy six-day ultra of all ultra marathons, and what that looked like for you.
Yeah, if you would have asked me, what, a year and a half ago, if I'd be running a six-day ultra marathon, I would have thought you were absolutely bonkers. And I still cannot believe what occurred last week. But it was the experience of a lifetime and one that I wouldn't change for the world. It came onto my radar about January-ish last year, 2023, when I signed on with Lululemon. Part of my contract at the time was this conversation around an ultra marathon that they'd be putting on. At the time, it was called, I think, Furthest Known Distance, and it had some room to evolve over time. And by around March, April of last year, it had morphed into a six-day ultra marathon, which when I heard that, I was...
Yeah, what was going through your head? You're like, 6 days. Why?
Yeah. Up until this point, I would stand by my strong statements of I will never run more than 100 miles. I've done Western States, I've done the Bear, UTMB, and 100 miles in my eyes is sufficient. I've never actually thought about that question of how far can I go? It's usually how fast can I go at said distance, never how far can I go. So That was an interesting concept for me to wrap my mind around because it was one I had never thought about, period. So yes, it was exciting, but at the same time, it was extremely scary because I'm an athlete that preaches like low mileage, health, longevity. And in my eyes, at least at the time, 6 days was anything but that. And
the antithesis of that.
The antithesis of that. I even told people going into the event that running loops around a 2.5 mile course was the antithesis of who I was as a runner. I enjoyed being in the mountains. However, this was a really interesting challenge for me. I am a pretty calculated, dialed, strategic runner. I always say when I line up on the start line, I'm never the fastest runner there, but I pride myself in having all of the controllables controlled. And that usually fares well for me in having pretty consistent results. So if anything, Lululemon's 6 day ultra marathon was something that I could apply all of those more strategic principles to. What was extremely exciting to me at the time, maybe a little bit more exciting than the 6 day distance, was the product innovation and the research that was going to all go in behind Lululemon Further. So when we signed on board, we were told that there would be a partnership with the Canadian Sport Institute, and we would be implementing just this swath of research. So everything from biomechanics research to muscular fatigue research, social and behavioral research, to, you know, just wearable data and biomechanics, lots of just like physiological variables as well, which was extremely exciting to me as somebody that spends a lot of time in like the science and engineering space. And then on the other side, we also got to spend a large portion of the last year in Vancouver informing the design of a ton of the products that were used in the event. So at the time last March when we learned about the event, we didn't know that it was going to be occurring in Palm Springs in March, where the high temperature, average temperature is 80 degrees Fahrenheit mid-March. So topical cooling especially was going to be extremely important. And I have, I swear, at this point in time, a PhD in topical cooling, and I love it. I swear by it. And if you ever see me on a race course where the temperature is above 60 degrees, you'll find ice down my sports bra. So I was extremely excited about all the innovations that I could help inform for this project. And some of the products that the team put together for the event are phenomenal. And I took so many with me so I could use for future events, because just some of the innovations, the way that the team has rethought a lot of products, a lot of innovations, like just thought outside the box for this event, is mind-blowing. So
they didn't just like shrink a male size running vest and be like, here you go, it fits. Like
exactly. So it's been really cool to see the project from start to finish, to see the heart and soul that like countless teams have put in for this event. I think like almost our entire company came together to make this event happen, all in the name of pushing women to the forefront of endurance research and to push women to the front of a huge brand activation, which we don't see very often. And I think in the trail and ultra running space, we really have never seen that. And it was really special to be a part of it.
Can I just say too, from the research side of things, so for the last year I've worked with Jason Koop and Steph Howe and Nick Tiller on an Ultra Running Research magazine. And there are almost no studies that have women in them, like any women. And it's just kind of crazy to me. I don't think I'd really realize how little research is done on women, not even like women as part of a study, you know, like it'll be a study of 50 male trail runners. And then you try to extrapolate their iron levels and try to figure out what you need as a female ultra runner. And it's like something isn't quite connecting here. And that kind of blew my mind that that was still the case. So honestly, like full disclosure too, Billy and I were at the beginning of the further event. We got to see the day before and then the first day of the race. And so that was just really cool to me from a research standpoint, like how much they put into that. Like they had a full lab out there. Like you, like the amount of data they were collecting. I'm really excited to see all of that come out. That's to me the most, probably like the top thing that you could possibly ask for from something like this, is just like you had a controlled environment and you could just test absolutely everything and come out with all this stuff that we've never had before.
Yeah, it was cool. Incredible. And just like from having access to a world-class medical team, to running through a biomechanics tent every single lap, so every 2.5 miles, my biomechanics were getting evaluated, to the point where when I was having an issue, I could stop and look at the biomechanics team and be like, can you guys tell me what's going on right now? Like, what's wrong with my posture? Why am I experiencing this symptom? And they told me what was happening. So in no other scenario could you really have experts on the ground giving you direct feedback in the moment to solve a problem that at that time was little but could have potentially been really big down the road 100 miles later.
That is insane. Okay, Mike, I want you to walk us through, first of all, when did you find out that you were going to be crewing a 6-day ultramarathon, and how did that make you feel? And then just sort of the logistics like leading into it, I guess you guys didn't really know a lot till you were there, right? Like you didn't have a chance to be on the course or really kind of fully grasp what you were getting into. So how did you prepare for that mentally going into it? And then we'll talk about how that played out.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me on the Trail Network podcast. It's so exciting to be.
You're our first guest.
I also love the name Trail Network. So great branding. I found out, well, let's see. Yeah, I mean, I learned about it kind of in conjunction with Leah over the course of the last year and a half or so. But, you know, even when we knew it was a 6-day event, I think we still spent a number of months sort of talking about like, what are your goals going to be for 6 days? Like, does that mean you have to see how far you can run in 6 days, or do we take advantage of this as like an opportunity to run, you know, like try to run a fast 100-mile time or make a 24 totally. Qualifying mark or something like that, like, you know, some kind of less than 6 day goals. Mm-hmm. And so those were definitely in my mind as possibilities. And maybe I was like trying to believe that those were going to be the right.
You're like, no, she's not really going to run for, no, that's a bad idea.
And so I guess, even earlier this year, like
February.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's only March. So earlier this year, like February.
So not long ago.
Like Leah had her crew assembled and everybody had like their plans to go out to Palm Springs to help crew. And it was a team of seven of us to support her. And even talking to like some of the other folks on the crew, we're like, well, you know, we're probably not really going to need to be crewing for 6 days. Like, you know, the Cactus to Clouds to Cactus Trail is right nearby in Palm Springs. Like, yeah, we could probably take Saturday and go do that. And like, maybe the
she won't notice.
Maybe that'll be a rest day or something. Like, so yeah, even like probably as recently as February, like still didn't quite know what to expect. And I don't even know if Leah, if you were at terms with like a 6 day goal yet. And so maybe that was a good thing though, because yeah, it didn't give us that much time to,
you don't want to overthink that maybe. Cause that's just daunting. Right.
And it was really the night, like, I mean, in the weeks leading up, I would say like Leah kind of came up with like, yeah, we're going to see what we can do for 6 days, but we're going to go about it in like a smart, healthy way. And like, if it ever gets unhealthy or risky or compromising later running this year or anything like that, then like, we'll put on the brakes or pull the plug or whatever as necessary. And so then it was finally literally the night before further started that we were in the hotel room with all seven of the crew members and Leah. And we like actually put it all on a spreadsheet of like, this is Leah's running plan, running / sleeping / eating and taking breaks plan was in just one like 400 or 500 cell or row spreadsheet, like literally broken out by I think 15-minute increments or something. And then we tried to even make like a crew plan that night before it started. And
how'd that work out?
I mean, like, it was kind of like two of us were like, well, we're just going to kind of be there the whole time and we'll, you know, adjust accordingly. And then these couple folks will be sort of like the day shift.
Cause you had your mom out there, right? Like, she's not going to be able to crew for 6 days straight. No.
And it got to the point the night before this, I'm not lying, it was 10 PM the night before further. And we got to the point where we're like, we'll just figure it out. And I was like, I was having a lot of stress up until that point. Like, not even with the idea of 6 days, but with the idea of making a plan, sticking to a plan, and just all the pieces of that plan that needed to fall into place that were so questionable because I've never done this before. They've never done this before. And that night I was pretty much like, you know what, guys, you'll figure it out. I trust you. You're all smart people that have raced races, crewed races, and you know how to do this, and you all are going to know what makes sense when the days approach and like they come around. So you'll figure it out. And I think that's the mentality that we ended up going into day one with my plan on paper was to go through the first like 24 to 26 hours, running like 50K chunks at a time. And then during between each 50K, I would take like a good 30-minute to 1 hour reset, by eating like a lot of food, protein, things like that. Get back out there, do that through 24 to 26 hours before I took a good sleep so I could get myself on a sleeping during the hot hours of the day schedule. And then after that plan, I was hoping then to kind of do 50K chunks at a time, 30 miles at a time, and see how long I could do that for.
With a giant asterisk beside it.
Yeah, the biggest asterisk in the world. Like being like, I think I can do this, but can I actually? And it was like,
which is the whole point, right?
The whole point. And on paper, it was like, I think I told myself I would try to do 12 laps, which is 30 miles in 5.5 hours. I gave myself like these 5.5 hour chunks and was like, let's see how long we can do this for. I could do that for about 2 days. And then I started to be like, I think I need 6 hours because the breaks between.
It was the breaks.
It was the breaks. It was never the running itself. Like, my running on day one was the same as it was on day two, as the same as it was on day six.
Your splits were very even, weren't they? I saw your Strava.
They were so even, and it was more like I just wanted longer breaks at a certain point. And factoring those in, I could have never told you the night before that I was going to want a 1 hour break at this point. So just pivoting, being adaptable, I swear those were the most important skills to have for all 6 days, just never knowing what was going to be thrown your way because there were so many variables, and we found out soon about those come day one.
Right. Yeah. You get halfway through and you're like, okay, so that plan was nice. We're going to throw it out the window. Oh my gosh. Well, I mean, I got to run the course the day before and that was kind of cool. And I actually ran 2 laps of it. And at the end I was like, I think I'm good. Sorry, Leah. But like, even that, like for someone that's used to running in the mountains and having like all the beautiful views and everything, I could see mentally how the biggest challenge was just going to be staying motivated within yourself to keep running. And I mean, it's a hard loop, like, you know it intimately, but there's a couple of hairpin turns on it. I found like some of it was a little off camber, and even that, thinking about going in the same direction and not being able to change directions at all, it's like, oh, these little things are actually a really big deal when you're running like however many, how many laps did you end up running? Like 180 laps or something?
Yeah.
That's kind of crazy. Like all these tiny, tiny things. So I was thinking about that going into the race, just like, man, this is a mental game. Like obviously it's physical, but even more than a regular ultra marathon where you're mixing it up and you have other things to think about, this is a mental game.
It was so mental. And I think Mike can probably add to a little bit of this as well. But, you know, initially my plan was to do 12 laps at a time. And then I think by the end of day one, I was like, guys, we need to chunk this into smaller chunks, because 12 laps was just giving me so much anxiety because it felt unattainable at the beginning of it.
It's a lot of laps.
Yeah, it was so many laps. So then we're like, let's break it into like 4 laps at a time. So just even having strategies where we were chunking it differently to make me wrap my head around it a little bit more, and then like promising me a small little break or 30-minute break after 4 laps, or a reset where I got to refresh and like wipe my face off, brush my teeth, things like that, that I could like look forward to and actually feel like it was different, or change my clothes. For example, we had limitless product to change into, and that was actually quite nice because you could refresh and reset yourself that way too. And I had a ton of different shoes I could, well, 2 different models of shoes I could wear. So that was a nice way to reset as well. So we just kept thinking about like, what are the different strategies we can do to make this mentally reasonable? And my mom did a lot with like bringing in photos to fill my crew room with. What were some other things that I was, that we focused on?
You're like pierogies, like snack breaks. And
yeah.
It's like always about the food.
When you could have a good like meal break and things like that.
Exactly. So like always having one thing, like something to look forward to. And I think one of my biggest fears going into the event, and I talked to our mental performance coach from Canadian Sport Institute about this, was just FOMO. I'm a social being. I love my people. And I'm an introvert, yes, but at the same time, I hate feeling like I'm missing out, and I want to hang out with my friends if they're all together. And I knew that that was going to be a really trying part for me, because I'd see my friends every 25 minutes and I wanted to spend some time with them. So that was something I really appreciated from the crew perspective, is they never limited me on that. Like they never
kicked you out.
They never kicked me out. And it was so nice. And they never pushed me out the door. And I think they wanted the ball to stay in my court the whole time, keep me in control, and never, because I think they knew that if they were to force anything, I would stop having fun. And for me, that was one of my A goals coming in, was stay healthy, have fun, and challenge myself, but, you know, meet those first few goals.
Which I love that was even a priority, because for me, just thinking about running what you did doesn't sound fun at all. So I just love that you went in there with the intention of making it fun. And I actually do think, in all sincerity, that's really important, because I think that if you lose that, like everything else kind of spirals from there. And it really is about staying mentally like locked into, you're there because you get to do this, and this is an incredible experience to have, and you don't want to kind of lose sight of that.
I am so excited to share that the Trail Network is supported by Osprey Packs, the premier pack company and creators of my personal favorite trail running pack, the Dyna 6. I've used the same Dyna 6 for the past 7 years without anything breaking. I've taken it on long days in the mountains, and I've done races in it, including the CCC 100-kilometer race at UTMB. All their packs are extremely comfortable and have top-notch durability. I'm so grateful to our friends at Osprey for supporting our podcast. Go check them out at osprey.com or at your favorite retail store.
Mike, from your perspective, I mean, you've run a lot of these races, but obviously you've never crewed anything to the scale that this was, right? Like that whole experience, like what was that like? You had quite an insane crew setup. You had a golf cart. You had all these things that we don't normally see at ultras. Like, what was that like for you?
Oh, yeah. That's funny you mentioned the golf cart and everything. That's a good point, because I was going to say, I feel like literally just maybe a month ago, like just before further, somebody asked me, I forget why this came up, but somebody asked me like, what the toughest race to crew that I had ever, like what the toughest like crewing experience I ever had was.
Yeah.
And I had trouble answering that, because I'm like, hey, crewing is, I don't know, it's always really fun and it's usually in cool places and everything. And like further is 100% the most difficult crewing experience I've ever had.
Further's but, like, hold my beer. Coming in.
But like, so that means I'm saying that the toughest crewing experience I've ever had
included, it was also the bougiest.
Included a golf cart that I could drive anytime I wanted from the aid station to the like private chef kitchen that had served 3 meals a day, which was right across, literally across the driveway from our RV that we could sleep in and like take showers in and all that. Like kind of the fanciest, most like bougiest setup that you could imagine, like literally you could imagine for crewing an ultra marathon, but it was also the most difficult and like demanding crew experience I've ever had, because it was 6 days of essentially nonstop, nonstop running. So
that's such a good point. Yeah. I feel like on day one, you're kind of like, this is excessive. But then by day six, you're like, no, they actually, someone was really smart in realizing we needed all this. Right.
Yeah. And I mean, and to be honest, like, yeah, I probably slept a total of like a few hours in the RV. Like, and like, mm-hmm. I enjoyed most of my meals at the kitchen, at the little dining tent where they had the chef, you know, and the whole food team was dishing up some really good food. So I did definitely enjoy that. But yeah, it was like, it was nonstop for 6 straight days. And like, I feel like,
yeah,
I feel like we needed that to some extent. Like obviously you could do a 6 day event with like, I don't know, out in a field somewhere and like, but how engaged would your crew really be? So,
right.
I think the way, I don't know if this was the intention or not, but like the crew was so well supported that like, kind of like happy crew, happy runner sort of thing, you know, like we were so well supported and set up for success that like there was never anything we needed or we were lacking. So all our needs were met, which meant we could focus all of our energy on the runners that we were supporting. So I don't know if that was the intention or not, but it definitely...
It was like F1. Yeah. Like you guys were like F1. That's what I thought when I saw the track and the trailers and everything there. It was like, how cool is this? Because we often do a lot with a little. And so you actually got the opportunity to see what you could do with a lot. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah. And the setup was sweet. I mean, like you saw, it was literally there were 10 runners and each of them had like... They called them like cabanas, I think.
Beautifully branded, like with photos, and like it was so beautiful. All of it was so cohesive and put together. And
yep. And inside that room, the crew room, there was like, we had a table with all the nutrition stuff and blister care and all that. There was like a literal like twin size bed, essentially couch kind of thing that Leah could take naps on or the crew could take naps on. Like there was like hangers full of like clothing racks full of all the different products that were available to change into, or different sizes of different, like anything you could need.
I wish we would have videoed one of the crew exchanges, because I mean, I owe my friends my life at this point, because like there were some scenarios where we might have had all 7 people on crew at one point in time. And I would come in, plop myself down. They'd say, what do you need? And I had one friend taking off my socks, like treating my blisters. The other person is like putting like lotion on my legs. The other person is feeding me pierogies like on my chest. Then somebody's changing my whole outfit at the same time. We have all these sensors on us with different data. And then Peter Tierney, who's one of the senior researchers from Lululemon, he was usually in charge of like scanning all my sensors and getting the researchers all the data that they needed on those. Then I had my beauty manager, my good friend Morgan, would be braiding my hair. And it was insane. It was kind of like I needed all those people though. Like at nighttime, we had a pretty like small shift. It was Mike, Brett Hornig, and then Peter were usually my night shift boys. We called them Tall, Dark, and Handsome. And
you guys just kept the ship afloat?
They really did. And I'd come in occasionally. I'd see one of them like passed out. And I was like, that's fine because I'm pretty basic in the nighttime hours. I don't need much. And it was just wild how efficient we were. But also like we still had fun, which was important. But I think Mike and I have been talking a little bit and debriefing after the event, just like how much went on behind the scenes that I didn't even witness. So I did a lot of my running at night because it was really hot during the day. And I would come in and tell my crew, I'd have an iPod shuffle and I'd be like, guys, I am just vibing out there. I'm having a good time. And I later learned that like Mike was having like a mental breakdown in there. And I had
They're like, we're glad you're happy.
We're glad you're living your best life out there, Leah.
So yeah, Mike, give us your side of it.
Well, yeah, I think you mentioned earlier, like, I mean, when Leah was running, they were like roughly probably 26 to 28 minute laps mm-hmm. or something like that. And that pace didn't really change. If she was running, no matter what day it was, the pace was generally around the same. So somewhere between like 25 and 30 minute laps.
Yeah.
It's not really a lot of time. And like, you know, there were maybe some times where it felt like we were in a little bit of a groove, but I don't know. I was really anxious going into this event because it was something so new, like, as I'm sure mm-hmm. the anxiety as well, like stepping into the unknown, doing something you've never done before. Like, well, now I'm supporting somebody who I love, who's doing something that they've never done before. And I just had no idea what to expect. I was anxious about what could go wrong, or, you know, like how hard it might get, or just all kinds of things, which I'm sure you can imagine. Like
what happens if Leah is just done? Like, do you push her? Do you let her be? Yeah. Like, you know, that's such a hard line, especially for you guys, like being married, you know her so well. And then also like, you know that she's going to be disappointed if she doesn't give her best. And like, that's a lot to hold and manage.
So there's kind of all those feelings and sort of anxieties sort of in the, you know, that are just, I'm holding in the back of my head the whole time. And then, yeah, like they'll come through a lap and maybe she needs ice this time, or she needs a certain gel or something this time, or maybe she needs like Voltaren rubbed on a certain part of her leg, or she needs a blister pot, whatever it is. It's like, there's usually something where like she'll come in, she'll spend a minute or so, she'll go back out, and then we'll, as a crew, we would like react to whatever just happened and like get ready for the next visit, which would only be in 25 minutes or less.
Would she give you parting instructions? Like, hey, on the next lap, I need this or that.
Yeah. Like sometimes I'd be like, on the next lap, I want 5 pierogies, a protein shake, and a smoothie.
Right. So it's like, okay, now I got a food order in, which is amazing that we could even do that. Or like, we need to go see the docs and get like, you know, whatever from them. Or we need to go to the nutrition tent and get this product or whatever. Or we need to get like a size up in this shoe or something, whatever it was. Like,
you're always working ahead kind of for when she comes back.
There'd be something to react to from the last visit to get ready. And then by the time we get it ready or whatever, we're like, all right, oh, she's going to be here in 7 minutes. Like,
so much for like, me going to the bathroom or having something to eat or whatever, right?
It felt really fast paced kind of almost the whole time. And nighttime was, for some reason, nighttime seemed to be a little bit calmer. But even then it was like, yeah, I don't know.
Because I could do like 2 laps at a time at night without needing you guys. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to talk quickly about both of your lowest moments, because I think I saw a photo, Mike, where you were crying and you were really emotional. But then I'm pretty sure like that was also maybe your moment of just being like, this is a lot, you know? So do you feel like you had your own like ultra low moments and you're trying to put on a brave face for Leah, but also like dying on the inside? And did that coincide with when Leah was dying on the inside as well?
No.
That must have been like an AI generated photo or something. Like that.
Yeah, obviously. They just put in a tear, single tear.
Hundreds of tears.
I had a complete like emotional breakdown about was it like 48 hours or
yeah, it was just over 48 hours in.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Cause you had the celebration like 48 hour mark and you were just like, whew.
Yeah.
Which one would might assume was because Leah had hit 48 hours.
Well, that's what Leah
right.
thought.
That's what she thought.
Yeah. I was like, right when I hit 200 miles, I came in and all my friends are celebrating. I'm like, yeah, great milestone, 200 miles. Woohoo. And Mike's crying. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's typical Mike. He's always crying at my finish lines. But like, this is just 200
miles. How sweet.
Yeah, how cute. Mm-hmm. And I told my friends, I was like, he does this all the time.
Yep.
And then I go off on my next lap. And then days later, I learn about.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I already talked about just like all the anxiety I had leading up to the event. And that didn't go away when the event started. Mm-hmm. And then it was just kind of like, I feel it almost feels weird to say, like, how could I be so anxious and have so much stress in such a like controlled, well-supported environment with like an RV and a private chef? Like, okay. When I say it like that, it sounds kind of weird, but yeah, it was like the anxiety that I had for Leah, just still not knowing what was about to happen. At that point, there had already been like multiple, like I'd call them little scares. Like in the first 24, 36, 48 hours, there was like, oh, like a little twinge in your knee or something mm-hmm. that came up, and then like the doctors took care of that. And then like, I think that was after you had your first like bout of nausea ever in a race and her first vomiting spell ever, like running induced. And so she like threw up in a bucket in the crew cabana there at like hour 37 or something.
Which probably freaked you out a little bit. You're like, yeah, oh, like this
all
is new.
Things that are mm-hmm. new and different and just like kind of unknown that would like come up. And then like, fortunately so far at that point, like she'd come out the other side of all of them and they'd like figured out a solution or mitigation or whatever for all of them. So things were actually going great mm-hmm. at mile 200.
Yeah.
And I think maybe I had either just like gone for a little run myself and I was like away for an hour or two or maybe eating dinner or something like that. So I was away for like an hour or two and I kind of came back. And like, because I was away, it was like anytime I stepped away from the course and Leah was doing laps, that anxiety like bubbled up even more. Cause I'm like, well, what if something else comes up right now and I'm not there to see it? Like, not that I would even like be the person to provide a solution, but like, you just want to know, you want to be there to support whatever way you can.
You're in it. It's your race too. It's both of your races. Like, yeah. It's hard to stop caring about that at every moment when you know Leah's still out there running, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so I had been away for like an hour or two, probably with those thoughts bubbling up. And then I came back to the crew tent. Leah was mid lap, so she wasn't in there yet. And like, I don't know, like somebody popped their head in the tent asking, like we were doing nutrition tracking and like
sensors,
you know, there was all the wearable data stuff that we had to make sure that most charged, like the ones that she was had on her person were charged and all that. So there's like all these like little logistic things that it felt like somebody like popping their head in the tent asking a question about something like, what has she eaten in the last 2 hours? Have you logged that stuff? Do you need help with that? Like, what device does she have on right now? Is it like charged? Like, and so
oh my gosh.
Like, I walked into the tent, like something was going on with the crew and then like somebody popped their head in and I just started fucking crying. And like it all just bubbled up and like, yeah. And like, not to mention obviously like sleep deprivation was an added.
It might have played into it a little bit. Yeah. Like the culmination.
It just felt like all these different stresses, mental, emotional, and physical, just bubbled up all at once. Mm-hmm. And like I mentioned, this was the toughest like crewing experience I've ever had. Like that was sort of the manifestation of it, is just like my body just reacted by breaking into tears. And I like there, Leah had a little, the corner of the crew tent had a, like a
changing
almost
tent.
Like a little fitting room type thing, yeah. Like a curtain.
Yeah.
And I just like went in there and I was like holding on to the top of the changing tent thing and just like bawling my eyes out and like trying to catch my breath.
Like, aww. You're like, I'm having a panic attack, but it's fine.
It kind of was. That's sort of what it felt like. And then I walked out and like Leah's due any minute now. And here she is coming in for mile 200 and they celebrated each of the like big milestones like that with like the bandana and everything.
Yeah.
And bubbles and stuff like that. And so like she was coming in. So like I grabbed my camera and like,
you're like, pull it together, Mike.
Yeah. And I think I took some photos but I was like crying when she came to 200 and we had a little celebration and yeah, she said, she's like, oh, he's always the more like emotional of the two of us.
I mean, yeah. In that moment, I think that there was nothing that, you know, you could have done about that, Leah, and it's probably best you didn't know what was going on.
Yeah,
I swear it was. And there were times, like there was one time where I came in and I asked our friend Caleb, I said, oh, where's Mike right now? He's like, oh, don't worry. We're out. We're taking care of him right now. I'm like, that's probably good.
Yeah. Like, I'm not going to ask any more questions. Yeah. Do you find, Leah, when you were out there, did you worry about everyone that was crewing for you and the, like, how tired they were? Like, did that kind of come into your head as this went on and you were aware of, like, what a stressor it was on everybody? Or were you just, like, zoned into your own race?
I was zoned in. As much as I would love to say I was thinking about them a lot, I really wasn't until day four, which is when I had my pretty much 0 mile day. I ended up running 10 miles and I'm a people pleaser by nature. And like running through my head that whole day, I had like a couple false starts where I went out for, I think, 2 laps, came in and felt okay, but I was like, I need a reset. So I took like an hour reset and I was like, let's get back out there. And then I had a lot of like hypothermia symptoms. So then I was like, let's just take a nap. So I took a 2-hour nap or something. And then I got dry, went back out, and then I started to have chest pain. And that's whenever I saw medical on day 4 and they ran an EKG on me just to make sure everything was okay. And it was, I think it just ended up being strained intercostal muscles, but chest pain is always scary and it's something like I'm not going to take lightly. So that day, then Mike and I had a conversation. I was like, you know what, let's just call this day. Let's reset. Let's go enjoy dinner with our friends, get a good night's sleep, and then see what I have for the next 2 days. And that was the day where I was like, I wasted my cruise time today. I like everybody came over here. Brett's still back at the hotel. Brett hasn't even come over yet today. And he's going to miss out on having a day. So that was when I started to spiral of, ugh, I just ruined everybody's day. And then Mike had to talk me off that ledge and be like, everybody's here for you. Like, they want to see you happy. They want to see you healthy. You did not waste anybody's time. They're going to be happy that you get to have dinner with them now. So that was a nice, like,
that was the most fun night of the whole, of the whole 6 days too. We, like, the whole crew, I think, save for Brett, because like, he was still back at the hotel. Like, basically the whole crew got to just have dinner together. Mm-hmm. And like, it was almost like recounting any other, like you would around a campfire out at dinner.
The end of a normal race where you're just going through it all. And
yeah, it was really, really fun. And yeah, then we got fun. Like a relatively normal night's sleep in the RV there too that night.
Yeah.
I admire you for that, because I think probably at that point it's like, well, what is the rest of it going to look like? And do I just like support everyone else? Am I going to get back out there? Like, that's kind of hard to kind of mentally be like, okay, am I just going to like hit reset, no regrets, start again? Like,
yeah, that was really complicated for me, because, you know, going into it, I say it was hard to plan for, but like on paper, I was doing quite decent per 6-day standards. Like, I was probably on track to go somewhere between 450 and 500 miles, which is really solid in the 6-day world. And I don't consider myself a 6-day runner by any means. So taking that 0 day on day 4 was kind of taking myself a little bit more so out of that like competitive mindset, and then recalibrating and being like, what do I want to give on these next 2 days? And surprisingly, like, my body on day 5 was, I think day 5 was one of my best days, which is so weird to say. And it came together. And then I was like, okay, like, I did start celebrating, like, not that I wasn't prior, but like taking a lap to walk with one of my fellow friends and athletes out there, like feeling more okay with doing that and celebrating somebody else's like 200 miles or 100 miles or 100K, 200K. And that felt really special, because I do feel like it lit a fire back under me after I had kind of had to take a step back from my more competitive goals. And yeah, then day 6, it happened that 400 miles came on my radar as something that was going to be a difficult but achievable goal. And I think I like having like a little carrot dangled in front of me.
That was kind of fun, because like, I think Mike, you might have posted it or put it out there that Leah was going to go for 400. And I was just watching that lap counter. It was agonizing at the end when they stopped the clock at 399.9 miles. And I was like, no, I knew that you did it. I was like, there's no way she stopped like right there. But it was just kind of funny that the clock just kind of like showed that for the longest time.
It's actually kind of unfortunate.
The 400 mile mark was like, a tenth of a mile past, you know.
That's what I figured. What are the odds of that, right? Because it's like a 2.56 mile loop or whatever. So,
and I thought about this for a very long time because we all wanted to walk our last lap as a group together. And then I'm like, I'm probably going to hit 400 miles with like 30 minutes to go. And then I was thinking about it. I was like, the group's probably going to start their last lap with an hour to go. And then I'm like, I'm not trying to run anymore. I'm not trying to run over 400 miles if I don't have to. So then I told our team manager, I was like, I'm dropping my beanbag at mile 400. And like the DMZ, the event coordinators, they can count my mileage there. But then somebody's picking me up in a golf cart and carting me the next 2.5 miles around the course to go meet up with my crew so I can walk in with them. And
oh my God, amazing.
He's like, we can make that happen. I was like, thank God.
That seems pretty fair. That's a good trade-off. I was wondering about that because I'm like the logistics of you trying to hit that, and I knew it was going to be close. And then I'm really happy to hear you got to celebrate some of those milestones, because some of the stories that were my favorite from the whole thing were like Rico hitting like her first 100 miler, or just like Kayla like hitting these milestones. Like, it's pretty incredible what everyone did out there. And I think like that's kind of the point, right? Is that, yeah, Camille crushed it, set incredible world records, and that's also amazing, but everybody hit something that was like furthest, you know, and like I think maybe way beyond like wildest dreams. And that's like,
it was so cool. Like, cool. I think especially on day 5 is when a lot of those big milestones started to be hit by everybody. And I think there was this one consecutive one where Kayla hit 200 miles, Montana hit 400K, which was the furthest she's ever gone. And they hit that within like one lap of each other. And I just remember passing them and then running backwards so I could then like go find them to come in with them. And those were the moments I remember the most. I don't remember my own like 600K or anything out there. I remember Rico coming in at 100 miles and popping off my grave in my little cabana there and hearing that she's coming in, and I was like, I am not well right now, but Rico's
but I'm it. Here
yeah, if you see the videos, I'm like,
you're like in your sweats
in my sweats, like ducking around the corner as she crosses the finish line. But those are the best moments. And I think Dylan Bowman, when he did a write-up for Free Trail, put it in a really nice way that it was like a bunch of golden hour moments, and that's what makes our sport special. That's what we find so much joy and like so many tears in all the time, watching like Western States and Hard Rock and all the other races are like these other memories and other moments that aren't just the front of the pack. And I think that's what made Further so special, is it was a never ending 6-day journey of celebrating moment after moment after moment. And it was so cool because I think you saw people who weren't quite hitting their goals come together to support other people to help them hit their goals. And you don't get a lot of that in the sport. And it truly felt like a team sport out there, even though we were all chasing like vastly different things.
It really felt like that. And you could just see you guys getting closer and closer and more invested in each other's stories as you went. And I mean, that's what we love about trail running, right? Like, it is those moments, and it's the unexpected ones you can't plan for. Like, you never know when you're going to share a race with a total stranger and be best friends by the end. And like, you know, and to kind of have this environment where you're able to see, especially like some of the women who'd never run these big distances before, maybe have never had that powerful experience. Like when Montana went and grabbed Rico to go around the track for her lap, was that for the 100 miler, I think? And it just seemed like Rico just needed that help. And like, to me, those were the moments that just like made me tear up a little bit, you know? Like, that's the stuff I hope people take away when they're looking at this thing. And maybe they're not like, oh, I could run 6 days, but maybe they're like, that feeling and those connections with people, and like that feels really special. Like, that's worth looking for. So to me, that seemed like really, really cool. And that definitely came across. Okay. We got to wrap up soon, but I did want to get you guys to each give me like a takeaway that you learned from the race that we can apply to our next races. Cause both of you guys are very seasoned ultra runners, but what's something that you learned that you're going to take forward that, I might be interested in, or our listeners might be interested in?
I love this question.
Yeah, I would love to think about that for a bit, but maybe the first thing that comes to mind is like mental engagement and how important that is, because like something was keeping all 10 of those athletes on that track, and like something was getting all 10 of them out on another loop around that lake, hour after hour after day after day. Like, and like, I mean, Leah will be the first to tell you that, like, I mean, she didn't rack up hundreds of miles and a bunch of 100-mile weeks like training for this thing. Like, it wasn't like necessarily like physical fitness and endurance that was like getting her out lap after lap. It wasn't like, I'm trying to remember, there was like a specific moment where I saw Rico. I think she was like calling it a night. I want to say it was before she hit 100 miles, but I don't remember exactly when it was. Yeah, but she was like calling it a night one day. And I mean, she looked like she was in the hurt locker and was like really giving this her all. And sure enough, next morning, like clockwork, she's back on the trail, clicking off.
And having to do more that day to catch up to her goal that she didn't quite complete the day prior, which is daunting.
Yeah. So like, there's something, and like, as an observer, even as somebody who, I have the amazing opportunity to witness a ton of really inspiring running performances on like trails and ultra marathons and things around the world. Even as somebody who is like lucky enough to get to see that so often, like I look at Rico, I look at Kayla clicking them off. I look at Leah like taking her eye mask off after a 15-minute break, and like with her toes all bandaged up and like KT tape on her knee and like going out into the wind and rain in the dark one night. Like I see all that stuff and I'm like, I can't imagine it. I can't imagine myself in that situation. I can't imagine doing it myself. And like, of course, I've never done 6 days, but like I've done hard things. Like you said, I've done ultra marathons. Mm-hmm. I've run to the bad conditions in the nighttime before, but watching someone else do it, I can't imagine it. And I think the only X factor I can think of there is just like the mental engagement that it takes to keep yourself in it. And like the mental framework that all 10 of them must have put themselves in for months and weeks leading up to this event that allowed them to keep driving and keep troubleshooting and keep working through, you know, the pain and the problems and the fatigue and everything else that they face, and kept them doing more laps around that lake. So I think I took that away from myself, is like just realizing how important your mind is in an ultra marathon endurance event.
Yeah. And I think too, like, and I got goosebumps just like listening to you there, just the power of that, but also having a good why. And we come back to that all the time in running, but I think especially for something like this, where you're just doing 2.5 miles around the same track, and the weather was like pretty crappy some of the time. You guys were dealing with hail and wind and rain. Like when I was there, it was really windy and rainy and kind of cold, like for the desert. And
yeah, the first nights especially were kind of bad.
Yeah.
Kind of gnarly. Yeah. And so, but I think the why was maybe all of you guys like being a team, because I really got the sense that everybody was, no one wanted to let anyone else down. No one wanted to be the one that was like, you know what, guys, this is too hard, I quit. Even if it meant like doing a reset and just like coming back at it, it's like, well, I can take a break, but I'm just going to like keep hitting that thing and just keep pushing another lap. And to me, that sense of like, we're all in this together was really strong and maybe part of that.
Yeah, that's actually important you say that too, because I think the day that I ended up taking my mental like reset from just doing 10 miles, I told Mike, I said, I'm having a hard time finding my why right now. And I think it's important to honor those moments too when you experience that. Like for me, that took recalibrating, that took resetting, and that took being okay and pivoting in that moment, because I was having a hard time finding that why and I needed to find it again. And then day 5 rolled around and I found it. So I think that leads into like my biggest takeaway is feelings can change, things change, and like, honestly, I know people say this and it sounds so freaking cliche, but like some problems are absolutely temporary and you just need to see them through. You need to obviously need to stay on top and manage certain issues and take care of them before they become big things. But I saw at least 10 different issues across my 6 days and not one of them lingered. And that was mind-blowing to me, because I think in a race, it's so easy to have something pop up wrap your head around that thing that's bothering you, go down this rabbit hole and just start focusing on that and taking yourself out of the game. But I think what we as a crew especially were able to do is to recognize the issue at hand, figure out a solution, mitigate it for the future, recognize that, hey, this is an issue you're dealing with. It's okay. We managed it. Let's go. And didn't let it bother us at all in the moment. And then by like day three, day four, it was gone and a new problem was there that we were trying to solve. So that was, I mean, I think I would only experience a lot of these scenarios in the context of a 6-day race, but I do think you can apply a lot of those takeaways to 100 milers, to 50 milers, to 50Ks that, you know, don't get frustrated over something small because you might be able to see it through.
And also, I love that. Being realistic with your goals going into it to the extent that you can. I mean, I know that helped a lot with further for Leah. It was like, I mean, we constantly said leading up to and during the event that there was nothing that Leah needed to do. There was no number of laps that Leah needed to run, which maybe that was like a good sort of level setting goal, like sort of helped inform goals and helped us like feel totally comfortable being patient and thoughtful. You know, like that might be different if your goal is to, you know, sacrifice everything you have to get to a certain mile mark or whatever. But like, whatever your case is, when you're doing an event of any distance, I think being in touch with your goals and your personal expectations is probably really important because it can inform those sorts of moments when things do start to go wrong and how you want to approach them.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, both of those are really, really good takeaways. And I just kept thinking as you're talking, Leah, like this too shall pass, you know, and I can't tell you the number of times I've done a race where I'm like searching for an excuse that's good enough for me to quit, you know, like maybe if I can come up with this one. Oh, yeah, this one's really good. My crew will totally buy that. Like, you know, right. And we totally talk ourselves out of the game. And so I think you did have an opportunity to see what that looked like over a longer period of time when, like, you never really could quit because the 6 days was still going to continue regardless of what you did. And so it was sort of like, I might as well make the best of it and I might as well get back out there when I can. And like, I think that's interesting because like in a 100 miler or something, you can sort of just be like, I'm going to stop at 40 and then the race is over and like, okay, well, that's done. And so to be in this environment where you're like, well, I'll just keep troubleshooting and stuff and to realize that, you know, yeah, for the most part, things do come and go and you can get through it. Like, I hope that's something you can distill down to the shorter quote unquote races, you know, and to me, that seems like something worth remembering for sure, because I totally self-sabotage that one.
100%. And I think that's an easy place to find ourselves in too. It's almost like all my future races, I almost need to set like a time seagull now that it's like, okay, if it's a 100 miler and I want to finish in 18 hours, I'm like, okay, I'll at least give myself 30 to like see things through, because the timed element added something really special and different that I've never experienced before. And it was exactly that. It gave me space. It gave me space to see things through and to like be okay with however I was defining like failure in that moment.
Totally. And I think that's a good way to look at races, because I think often in 100 milers, we screw up because we are rushing. And I think if you can just take that concept and apply it to like, I have the time I need to deal with this thing and then keep going, you know, that's hopefully something you can use. Thank you guys so much. This has been such a treat and really appreciate both of you guys. It was really cool seeing it like firsthand. And then, I mean, obviously I wanted to be there for the whole thing and I just trying to follow and just like watching it all unfold. And Leah, what you accomplished, like the fact that you ran 400 miles around that track, like just blew my mind. But
mine too.
Yeah. Right. Like all of ours. It's really cool. It's really the power of the brain, the power of what we can do as a community when we have these resources, all the research that's going to come out, all the products that were developed that hopefully are going to trickle down and things that we end up seeing on the market for women. Like it's all really, really, really cool. So yeah, thanks for sharing.
Extreme privilege to be a part of it and to have like the best crew in the world. I know.
Dream team, you guys, dream team.
I got the best crew, but oh man, mine was amazing.
So. And how cool is it that now here I am as a man, like wondering, oh man, am I ever going to have a product like that made for me? Like,
do I get a sports bra with the.
He was like, do I get an ice tank?
Kind of flipping the script. That's kind of cool.
I honestly, like, looking at some of the stuff that you had in your trailer, Leah, like the arm sleeve shrug, all these things, like, it's genuinely innovative in a way that I don't think any running company for men or women has really pushed the envelope. And maybe because Lulu doesn't come from a trail running background, they approach it with a totally clean slate of, like, what's possible. And I think that's really, really neat. So,
yeah. I love just, it was amazing to be a part of and, like, be a very tiny part of the innovations that they put together, because I love seeing women be pushed to the forefront for products that I haven't been able to be, like, privy to before.
Hell yeah. Well, thank you guys. We'll sign off for now, but love you both. Looking forward to seeing you at a start line somewhere soon. And Leah, you've got Western States coming up.
Yeah.
Mike, are you running it or are you going to be out there? Did you decide? You were on the wait list, right?
I'll be taking photos and supporting.
All right. Telling the stories.
That wasn't the fan favorite decision, but it was definitely the Mike favorite decision.
Yeah, I get it. I struggle with the same thing myself, so I do get it. All right. Well, thank you guys, and we will talk to you again soon.
Thanks for having us.